Okay, today is July 22nd, 2011. This is Amber Duke, and I am interviewing Beverly Marmion in the Ann Braden Institute for Social Justice Research. So, Beverly, thank you for joining me today.
You're welcome.
And for this this track, for the interview, can you say and spell your name for me?
Beverly Marmion, B-E-V-E-R-L-E-Y.
Okay, great.
M-A-R-M-I-O-N.
I should let you get the other half out. Sorry about that. Thank you. Can you tell me when and where you were born?
In Washington, D.C., April 25th, 1938.
And how did you end up here in Louisville?
My father's job moved him here when I was 15.
And can I ask what sort of work your father did?
He was a clergyman.
Great. And your family he finished his career here in Louisville, retired here?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about your educational background?
Well, I graduated, I attended public schools in Texas, and when we moved here, I was a junior in high school. And so I graduated from Eastern High School in Middletown. And then I went for 2 years to college, to Randolph Macon Women's College, which I know is Ann Braden's. Spent 2 years there. And then I transferred here in my junior year to the University of Louisville, and I graduated from U of L. And then I became a librarian, and I went to Columbia University's School of Library Service and got my library science degree, and then I came back here and worked at the public library, and then at the Kornhauser Health Sciences Library at the University of Louisville. Now I'm back at the public library.
Great. How did you first learn about race and racism?
I don't know whether I was born into it, I suppose. East Texas is a very, is a deep South kind of place. And we, what can I say? Well, I was born in Washington, D.C. I was my parents' first child, and we lived there for 2.5 years before we moved back home to Texas. And my mother always had maids, African-American maids, who took care of me mm-hmm. and my sisters and helped mother keep house. And we rode buses that were segregated, and we sat in the front of the bus. Sometimes I sat in the back of the bus with mother's maid if we were going together somewhere in Dallas. I never attended an integrated school. And in Dallas, where we lived, the neighborhood where we lived had, for many of the larger houses, it had a servant's quarters, a little bitty house in the back of the backyard. And when we lived in Dallas for 9 years, between the time I was 7, 15, you know, we had a maid, different maids living in the servants' quarters, you know, and coming in and spending their days with us. So I don't know that I thought about racism particularly. I really didn't. That was just the way things were.
Mm-hmm.
And I and when we moved to Louisville in 1954, we lived in a neighborhood in the East End, and as so many of the houses in that neighborhood, you know, mother had a maid, a day worker, who would come out at that point just one day a week. But we were always friends with our maids and our, you know, and felt close to them. And we My sisters and I all learned the housekeeping arts, you know, of cooking and cleaning and how to sew and that kind of thing from our mother. And so it was a happy kind of atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But it was not until when the Civil Rights Movement arrived, I was basically reading about it in the newspapers. I really did not join any of the demonstrations here in the 60s around open housing and that kind of thing. And by that time, I was working at the public library initially, and so I was going to work downtown every day, but not really involved in any of the social movements that were going on around me.
And so as you were growing up, did you was there discussion about political and social issues, not necessarily about race, but...
No, there was not, and I really do regret that. We just didn't have those kinds of conversations in my family.
Were there people who inspired you when you were growing up?
No. In terms of racism, anti-racism?
Just in general, just any people
no,
that you looked up
not,
to?
No, not particularly.
Okay. What was the first political or social justice issue that interested you?
The Israeli-Palestinian issue really interested me because I made a trip to the Middle East in 1964, and I spent 4 months there traveling around on my own as a traveler, and I discovered a lot of things which have remained of interest to me today, to this day. And so I'm... and there's a lot to keep track of right now.
Yes, to say the least. What was the first social justice action that you took? I know you said you weren't involved in open housing here in the 60s, but what was your first sort of action that you took?
Well, we were, when the public schools, the city of Louisville public school system and the county, Jefferson County public system, school system merged in 1975, there was a lot of conflict and a lot of fear in the community, and I was just astonished to see all of the opposition and the riots out on Preston Highway and all of the things that were going on in Louisville at that time. And I was sharing an apartment with a librarian who worked at Bellarmine College. And she came home one afternoon in September of 1975, and school had opened a couple of weeks before, and we were, and she told me that there was going to be a meeting downtown that evening at the First Unitarian Church at 4th and York, of people who wanted to come to try to deal with this issue in a positive kind of way. And she had been, have you met Professor Fred Hicks? Okay, his wife, Judy Hicks, was an anthropologist as well, and she had a position at Bellarmine College, as it was then, and she was a friend of my friend, who was the librarian there. And Judy, of course, was deeply involved with all kinds of things, as we learned later, dealing with racism, integration, the West End Community Council, and things like that. And she had told my friend Rosalind about this meeting that was going to take place at the First Unitarian Church. And so Rosalind came home and told me about it, and then we watched the 6 o'clock news, and of course it was just more mayhem down on Preston Highway. And if you've ever looked at the microfilm of the Courier Journal and the Louisville Times for those days, it would really be interesting to see what was going on. And we or trying to figure out, should we go to this meeting or should we stay home or this or that, but watching TV that night on the local news, we just decided, well, we'll go down and see what was going on down there. So we came down, innocence, believe me, and in the parish house at the Unitarian Church was this gathering of all of these people whom we later came to know, people who were active, had been active for years in issues of fighting racism and educating the community about the need for social change and that sort of thing. So there were a lot of people at that meeting. Bob Cunningham was there, of course, Judy and Fred Hicks, George and Jean Edwards, Joy Portugal, whom you need to interview for this because she's so key, just but a lot of other people, and Maddie Mathis and Maddie Jones, and just so anyway, at that meeting or subsequent meetings, we formed this organization called Progress in Education, which was a black and white organization committed to standing up for the rights of the children and their rights to an education free of violence and coercion and support for them and support for the teachers and so forth. So Rosalyn and I became involved with Progress in Education, and we joined, there were different subcommittees, and I joined the subcommittee that was finding a place to have a public rally. And so we finally found it at Central Presbyterian Church. And Pete Seeger was a friend of Ann Braden's, and she invited him to come and perform at that rally at Central Presbyterian Church. We had a march through the city before then and so on and so forth. But it was a very, all your emotions were heightened. But then I joined, there were several things going on at that time that were parallel to busing, as I think back on it, or the beginning of integrated education in the public schools here. And one was that the Kentucky Alliance chapter was being formed here, and also the local chapter of the Fellowship of Reconciliation. They were both in their formative stages, right? At that time. But anyway, Progress in Education eventually died a natural death after a couple of years, maybe 3 years, I'm not sure now. But some of the people who were involved with getting the Kentucky Alliance started were looking for ways of getting people to join the Kentucky Alliance. And Progress in Education was a place where they were looking for people to join the Kentucky Alliance, and so that's how I came to join the Kentucky Alliance. Joy Portugal was probably instrumental in urging me to join the Alliance, and of course, once we had that big meeting at the First Unitarian Church, and we broke up into smaller groups depending on what we were trying to accomplish, we started meeting at 3208 West Broadway. It wasn't the Braden Center. It wasn't called that then, but it was a meeting place that Ann and Carl Braden had purchased. And so we started, we were going down there a lot. Now, Carl Braden had died a few months before September of 75. So I never met him. But of course I was aware of the Braden's notoriety in Louisville. But beyond that, I was just not really, all of this was very new to me, and it's been a learning experience ever since.
And so when you, I guess, officially became involved with the Alliance, then that would have been around 78 or 79?
No, it was 75, 76.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you were working on that and progress in
education.
Well,
when progress in education tapered off, perhaps my dates are not exact, but there was no, it just seemed a natural segue into working with the Kentucky Alliance chapter.
Right. Mm-hmm. What were the years that you were active in the Alliance?
I was active in the Alliance until about 1999 or 2000.
And when Joy was sort of talking to you about getting involved, and you decided to get involved, what were you sort of hoping to achieve through working with the Alliance?
I didn't put a lot of thought into it. You know, when you're an activist and you're going to meetings and doing various things, it's a social life as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of time. And so it became a kind of a part of my social life because of the activity that it demands.
Mm-hmm.
But we, and I was not, no one just sat me down and said, you know, this is the Kentucky Alliance, this is what we're going to do. It was more examples of things that we got involved with. And it was only by attending meetings that I realized, you know, the Alliance is working very hard to be a black and white organization and to maintain that and to be a place where people could express their opinions and bring their grievances there and be heard. And so, and being made aware of situations that had arisen in the community as a result of racism. One of the first things I did when progress in education was over and we were just meeting about things going on in Louisville was a young black man, and I have forgotten his name, but had been beaten by the police very, very severely and had lost an eye and was in jail. I got involved with that and went down and met with a small delegation, met with the police, tried to bring about some awareness on the part of the Courier Journal and Times about the real facts of what had happened to this person and so forth, and try to pull it out from just a lot of police cases. And we were able to do that. And but it's all nothing really stands out. If someone were to ask me about something that happened, I might would very possibly be able to remember some details, but it was just nothing really stands out in my mind particularly.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, this is a nice segue, you're talking about this case of this young man or this case of police brutality that you worked on, and you were active with the Alliance for many years.
Mm-hmm.
And so could you highlight some of the major issues that the Alliance was organizing around during your time that you were active?
Well, police brutality was always a factor, and it was not always brutality. It was just, I mean, sometimes it was mistreatment.
Mm-hmm.
And and there were other cases that we got involved with that were and I don't remember you know the case of Narvel Tinsley and his brother. You know about the Tinsleys? No.
I believe so.
Well, they shot a policeman and they were imprisoned. And Bill Allison was one of their lawyers. And they were eventually released from jail, but that was a very high-profile situation. We were involved with the death penalty activities, and we hosted speakers here. We hosted Angela Davis here once. That was a very controversial move. And we hosted, we also organized buses to go to demonstrations outside of Louisville. We went to Wilmington, North Carolina. This was a very, very long time ago. Around the Wilmington 10, organizing buses takes a lot of effort and energy. We went to the 10th year anniversaries of Dr. Martin Luther King's speech in Washington, the I Have a Dream gathering there. I did not go on the Million Man March, but that was something along those lines that the Alliance got involved with, very definitely.
This next question is a hard one to ask of a person who's been involved in activism, because the answer is usually everything, but can you sort of talk about your role in the Alliance's response to various issues? What were some of the things that you actually, you know, did in your organizing there?
I had a full-time job, and so I was not available except most of the time for night meetings and that sort of thing, and sometimes things on the weekends. But the Alliance was a balancing act with trying to be an organization that dealt with civil rights as something that needed to be kept in the forefront of the community's mind all the time. But it had this role of being a black and white organization. So there was always in the so there were psychologically there were various things going on all the time in terms of keeping a ratio of white to black and the active membership and this and that and the other. And I realized that it was important as a white person to be there and to attend as many of these public demonstrations and things like that as I could. I was one of the chairs of the Alliance for a year at some point in the, I guess, early 90s. Don't remember now exactly. But, and I'm not a writer, so I was not someone who wrote letters or statements and that kind of thing normally. Mm-hmm. Anne had come, and Joy Portugal as well, had come as journalists, really. And they had all this experience as journalists. And, of course, Anne But I learned how important it was to frame arguments and to be careful in what you wrote in framing your argument and presenting your issue. And that was... And I can do that today for work that I do today, but it's not work with the Alliance. I'm active with the Israeli-Palestinian groups here in the city trying to, as an educational effort.
So
as I say, it was a learning experience.
So were Anne and Joy sort of mentors to you in that way?
Well, I've not thought of them as mentors, but I suppose in a way they were. I saw... What was really fascinating to me about, well, let me back up. I went to the Middle East in 1964, and that was a really long time ago. And I came back and was, I spent for a month in Jerusalem. And I am traveling out from there as my base. And I started in Greece, Turkey, and then went around to Egypt before I flew back to Europe. But when I came back from the Middle East, I was just wanted to read everything I could about it. It's history, it's archaeology, it's past, it's present, this and that. And that interest has stayed with me. But one of the things when you become interested in current events about the Middle East, you become aware really quickly that a lot of important things are not published in the American media, and that particularly on the Israeli-Palestinian issue, the Israeli position is given prominence. And you have to really dig to find out what the Palestinian story is and then the background to all the things that have been going on. But I was able, through mostly books at the public library, and a few times I came to Ekstrom to look for some things here. In the year or so after I came back from the Middle East, I just personally gave myself a crash course in all these subjects that I hadn't read about before I went, but now I wanted to know about when I came back. And so I really quickly became aware of the lack of information and balance in news stories about the area and that sort of thing. And then I began to read about the influence of backers of Israel and its positions on American government and on American media and so forth. And the fear of being called anti-Semitic if you question some of this. So when the school systems merged in Louisville and Jefferson County, what was so interesting was that the normal leadership of a community was intimidated by the protesters who did not want the schools integrated and who were fearful and making a lot of noise and rioting and this sort of thing. And so the community leaders did not step up to say, this is the right thing to do and we are going to support this. And that was the mayor and government officials. That was clergy here in the city, white and black. And business people, particularly in neighborhoods in the southern parts of Louisville and the county, businesses were pressured to put signs in their windows saying, we do not support busing or this or that and the other, so that they wouldn't lose business. I mean, the whole leadership in different ways of Louisville and Jefferson County just collapsed in the face of this resistance. And it was fascinating to me because it correlated with what I had learned about people being afraid to be called anti-Semitic if they wanted to present a different viewpoint about what was going on between Palestine and Israel or point out facts about the Palestinian experience and this sort of thing. And it was, I just watched it with that definite, at that time, awareness that that's one of the things that interested me so about the situation. Mm-hmm. And that progress in education was formed, as I think about it now, to fill this void, to be a leader on this issue in a positive way and to think past the violence and the protests to what we were trying to do, which was to educate children equally and protect them as we educated them and give them educations that were as equal from one school to another as we could. And I think, and then of course, once we got past that and I just stayed with the alliance with these other issues, you know, that it was interested in and focusing on.
Mm-hmm. Can you kind of talk a little bit about the mechanics of how organizing happened at the alliance when you were involved? I know that there was a committee structure, and then I also know that there was some structure, but I know that there was looseness in people being able to come in off the street and
yes.
say, this was my issue, this is my concern.
Well, we always had a chairperson and a secretary and a treasurer. We always had those offices, but our meetings were initially, anyone could come in and speak, whether you were on the agenda or not. And I suggested at some point, maybe, I just don't have the dates, 8 or 10 years maybe into this kind of situation, that I thought that the alliance needed to have some time to where the actual members of the steering committee could just be together without any outside voices and deal with our business, but that we needed time to hear others. And so we set up, and I don't know whether it goes on still, 2 meetings a month. One was for the steering committee, and one was for a meeting where anyone could come in and present what they wanted to talk about, to try to bring some structure to what I like structure.
Do too.
I like structure, and I don't, to the point where I don't like meetings where we all sit around in a circle and take notes on our knees. I want to be around a table where I can sit on at a table and make notes, and there are people around the table whom you can look at. I mean, that's how uneasy I am when we're not around a table and really having business meeting. But anyway, so but often the meetings were very unstructured. And Anne was very democratic, and she did not want anyone to go unheard. And so the role of the chair, you know, to call it to order and to say, well, we've discussed this enough, let's move on to something else, and to keep your eye on the clock if you promise a 2-hour meeting. And, you know, that just sort of went out the window at much of the time. And then Anne had a great belief in her. If she saw a viewpoint that her viewpoint was not being addressed well enough. She did really want to hold the floor and make sure that her viewpoint was heard and discussed as well as everyone else's. So sometimes those meetings were very long and very sometimes contentious. And so a person had to have a lot of patience to want to live with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great to be in a place where people spoke their minds. It was nothing like a Board of Trustees meeting here at U of L, believe me. I work with the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And we have more structure to our meetings, but it is an organization where you can speak your mind as well, and where there are people who have definite positions and want to be heard. And I think it's important that there are people like that in organizations. It needs to have more heart and flexibility than just a very conventional kind of structure. So I've been part of sometimes the extremes here.
Right.
There were individuals who had come into the Alliance from other civil rights work. And like the West End Community Council here, or SCEF, the Southern Conference Leadership Organization that Ann Carl Braden ran here, as well as the NAACP. And and those people brought a knowledge of, well, for one thing, they lived. I did not live in the West End, but I worked in downtown Louisville, and I lived in the East End. But I think that, so I was made aware of community issues as a whole,
mm-hmm.
and parts of the community that otherwise I would not have known anything about. And I think personally that was just so very valuable, and it has given me a really different outlook on life. I'm not answering your question about the things that the Alliance did and so forth that I was involved with, but I am just really thinking about the windows of my mind that were opened and I hope still remain open today. I'm really interested in the new mayor, and I wonder, I just wonder about some of the things that he is going to do in terms of jobs in Louisville and jobs for people in the West End. The West End grew up as a place where there was a lot of light industry. There are a lot of brownfields in the West End where there were plants and people didn't live very far away and they could get to work and so forth. And I see all this development out in the East, and I just wonder why in the world they can't clean up the brownfield sites in the West End and plant their businesses there, and then it would open up opportunities for employment and so forth. Louisville and Jefferson County sometimes are just really not the leaders of our community need to have a lot more awareness of what the real needs are here than they have. But that's another issue. But I mean, for me, working with the Alliance was just a real eye-opener for a lot of things that I otherwise would not be aware of.
And that's something I wanted to talk about. A lot of people have said this to me, that both, one, having the opportunity to work in a multiracial organization, mm-hmm. to work across lines of difference was, you know, this great experience they may not have had otherwise. And then also being able to build friendships, mm-hmm. With people over the years through working with mm-hmm. them, mm-hmm. You know, exposing them to people that otherwise they may not have ever encountered in mm-hmm. their life. Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, about some of the relationships that you made and just how you really feel like the experience of working with the Alliance sort of maybe even put you on a different path than you may have been on otherwise?
Well, how many years is 1975 to 2000? That's 25 years. And I have not been active with the Alliance now for about 10 years, and I can't talk about what it's doing now. I support it financially, but my responsibilities with my parents and so forth have kept me from being an active member. I work downtown, and I've always worked in downtown Louisville, so I've always worked where it's the most obvious place where the different parts of Louisville can come together and interact. So I'm really an urban person, and I think that going to the Braden Center and participating in activities out there and efforts that originated there has given me a rather well-rounded view of what Louisville is all about, and that I would not have had otherwise. And I feel hard to say. The friendships that I made out there, I don't continue, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. We met and we did work together, and when we met, there was purpose behind it and a goal we were working toward. And so in that sense, it was like a work situation. It was not, and I said it was a social life as well, but it was a social life with real definite purpose to it. But since I'm no longer active with the Alliance, I'm not present with the friends I've made, and some of them have died. Actually, or moved away, And things have changed for them as they have changed for me as well. Some of them, goodness gracious. But I think the fact that we had a common purpose in what we were doing, I think that is very valuable. And I feel, well, rather than specific friendships, I feel a sense of community with them. If I were to, when I am with them, Maddie Mathis, Howard Owens, Kirk, Tom Moffitt, you know, there is a shared background that we don't even have to talk about, and so forth.
Oh, that's interesting. Because there's a comfort in that.
Yes, there is. I was looking at your photos. There's one around the corner of Rodney Horde and Milton Carpentier sitting right behind your head over there. And Rodney has died. But I see Milton. He doesn't live far from me. Once a month for a meeting with the Louisville Committee for Israeli and Palestinian States. But I met Milton and Rodney at the Braden Center. But there's just... There's just a commonality of experience that when you're together, you know, you are both pretty much in sync.
A lot of folks that I've talked to, obviously this work was very time-consuming, or all-consuming,
yes,
in some cases. And so I like to ask folks how or even if your family life was impacted by the time that you spent organizing with the Alliance.
It did take away from some time that I might have gone to a concert or done something else like that. It certainly did. And I think that if you become really involved with an issue, it can take over your life. Or certainly in terms of time spent with it, time spent thinking about it.
If someone asked you to summarize the mission or the overall goals of the Alliance during the years that you were active, how would you summarize it?
Well, I think there were several. I think that as an organization that was not, we wanted to be, multiracial. And at that point, there's more than just black and white to saying multiracial. I realize that. But at that time, the issues were so often literally black or white. Or we wanted to be a multiracial society, and we wanted to deal with problems that the white leadership of Louisville either was, we wanted to bring them into consciousness, and then we wanted to keep them an issue so that they would be dealt with in a positive way, a beneficial way for people involved. And in our meetings, we, whoever was around the table or whoever brought an issue to us, we wanted to give that person our full attention and our and consideration of whatever was brought to us. But we didn't adopt, although it was tempting, to everything that was brought to us. Anne used to say, when people would bring her cases of hardship, personal hardship, or this or that, and people would want to help that person, we're not a social service organization. You know, we're not. We have a different purpose. It's a political purpose, and we are trying to change attitudes. We're not social workers, but we want to make the people who can pass laws, make judgments, in court, the Board of Aldermen, whatever. We want to bring issues to their attention that they have the power to change. We want them to be aware of situations, and then we don't want to let them, we want to keep the pressure on or the spotlight on or whatever issue we've adopted. But we're not a social service organization, and we're not, and that hurt people, including members of the Alliance, because they felt so keenly that they'd been harmed in their own lives and needed some redress. Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of the Rodney King situation, and you can remember that probably. Mm-hmm. Of course, that had happened to people here. I told you about that case I was involved in really early on when that young man lost his eye being beaten so severely by the police. But we had a solidarity demonstrations downtown around the Rodney King case, and we made public statements about his situation and about corollaries with Louisville and so forth. And that was not terribly long ago, as I remember it. In my last years at the Alliance, we were becoming more and more aware of Hispanic needs in the city and the Hispanic community. It was growing. And so we were trying to broaden our efforts to include their concerns and focus on situations that they were encountering.
And from what I've, you know, understood through talking to, you know, Tom, who's still active, and David Lott and Carla Wallace and some of those folks that are still active, it's still an ongoing mm-hmm. project. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of work that they've said that needs, that there are black-brown alliances yes. that need to be built mm-hmm. and looking towards mm-hmm. this larger mm-hmm. multiracial model. Mm-hmm. As we come to a close, I know that, you know, when I call folks and ask, tell them that I want to do an interview, that they probably have a certain, you know, certain things in their mind that they want to talk about, or certain, you know, questions that they think will be asked, but I may not necessarily ask them all. So, you know, is there anything that you'd like to share that you haven't had the opportunity to yet?
Well, something just occurred to me. Louisville has a large community of people who are interested in various social issues. If you look at the calendar in the Forsooth newspaper, and they are and I'm not quite sure how Louisville came to be, have such a diverse group of organizations that are focused on, oh my goodness, women's rights, civil rights,
LGBTQ.
Gender rights, mm-hmm. Environmental issues, nuclear issues. I mean, we've got, it's really quite a big picture. For example, Cincinnati does not, to my understanding, have anything like the variety of activists in all these many different areas. And I think it's really, as a laboratory, I think it's really interesting, and I'm not quite sure how it all came about, but I think Louisville is really a very interesting place to be.
Not interesting that, I mean, it seems from, you know, thinking back to the busing demonstrations to, you know, reading Forsooth and seeing all that's going on, you know, you probably couldn't have imagined in 1975 mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. that paper would come out of, mm-hmm. you know, the city.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that some people would think Louisville is not a very tolerant community, but I think that there is a degree of tolerance here that allows these groups to flourish, to arise and to flourish and to work with their different issues in different ways. I don't know what has happened with the city-county merger. I did not vote for merger because of, and I'm not sure how that has played politically, but I think it has had an influence on what is going on in the community. But it'd be interesting to hear some discussion about that. Just the programs developed here at U of L are the Pan-African Studies Department and the Ann Braden Institute, and now the anthropology department is developing some Islamic studies. Not quite sure what that's all about, but there's something going on over there that is a new focus that they've got enough students interested in. And now we're going to have a peace,
yes,
nonviolent, coordinated effort that's going to have a certificate or a degree or something. And
Latin American and Latino studies. Okay, is there anything else?
No, there isn't.
Well, thank you so much. This
was
wonderful.
Thank you, Amber, very much for your invitation.